The Tom Woods Show, episode 1675.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, by now you've probably noticed that news about the virus is almost always fact-free hysteria these days. So you need my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About the Lockdown. Go pick it up at wrongaboutlockdown.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Today, we're talking about people's perceptions of the rich, how they form these perceptions, what those perceptions are, how they can be influenced. Very, very interesting. Of course, we have a suspicion about what people think about the rich, but it's a little more nuanced and subtle than you might think. And joining us to talk about this is the author of a brand new book on that subject, and that's Rainer Zitelmann, who is the author of The Rich in Public Opinion, What We Think When We Think About Wealth. Dr. Zitelmann, welcome to the show.
Yes, hello.
I am so glad to be talking to you, because not only because I like what you've just done in your most recent book, but also because your book on Hitler and the policies of seduction. What's the exact title of that book in the English translation?
Yes, it is the English translation. I think the English title is not so good. And the bigger problem is you can't buy it anymore in the United States. I'm looking always for a publisher who will publish it again. So if there is someone maybe in the audience who has an idea, I would appreciate.
It's a great book. I'll link to it on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/1675, along with your current book, simply because it's a tremendous overview, especially there are a couple of chapters in particular of how Hitler thought about the market economy. And that's an evolving thing in his thinking. And you really track it very nicely. And it introduces a level of nuance that is missing these days, because so many people want to associate Hitler with capitalism. And it's not so clear as that. So
no, absolutely. On the contrary, he had much more stronger anti-capitalist and socialist aspects in his worldview than most people are aware of, and it's underestimated.
Well, I want to spend the balance of our time, though, on your current book, "The Rich in Public Opinion: What We Think When We Think About Wealth." There are some interesting and somewhat surprising results that you've found in this book that I'd like to discuss. There's so much interesting material on this. I think back to Helmut Schuch's book on envy anytime this topic comes up, and you've got some material here on envy. First of all, when you're asking people poll questions about the rich, how are you deciding what makes somebody rich? Is it a dollar figure, or is it you know rich when you see it?
Yes, this is a good question, because there were a lot of polls and without any definition what they mean by rich. And we know from other polls that people have a very different view what is rich. In some polls, people said someone is rich if he has like $3,000 a month, and others said someone is only rich if he has more than 100 billion. And so there's a wide range. And for our survey here, we asked people, or we gave people the definition that someone is rich if he has $1 million but plus to his apartment, or you know, without his apartment or without his house, in addition to it, $1 million.
Okay, all right. Well, that's a fair enough place to start. All right, what were you hoping to find out in this study, and did any part of it surprise you?
First of all, there are so many studies about prejudice and stereotypes against minorities, against Jewish people or against black people, gay people, a lot of studies, prejudice against women. There are even studies about prejudice against overweighted people, but there was almost no study about prejudice against rich people. And I think it's a big problem, not only in United States, but much more here in Europe. And this was the first poll we commissioned Institute Ipsos Mori, and they asked people the same questions in United States, in France, in Germany, and in UK. And so we could compare the attitude toward rich people. And one important aspect, as you mentioned, was envy, social envy. We wanted to find out how envious people are in these different countries towards rich people.
There are some differences. It looks like Germany and France are in a class together, and the UK and the United States seem to have similar results with the two of those. I'm interested in some of the questions you asked, like, for example, which of the following professions do you think the members deserve to be rich? Or how people felt about lottery winners. Now, that was a bit of a surprise because you would think, at least even today, people still give lip service to the idea that there should be some connection between the work you do and your compensation. And a lottery winner turns that completely upside down. Lottery winner does essentially nothing and is showered with wealth, and yet people have less envy and bitterness toward those people. How do you account for that?
Yes, this is right. We had three groups. The one group we call the envious, the other group we call the non-envious, and then there's a group in the middle between the ambivalent people. And if I speak about the group of envious people who answered a lot of from our envy questions in a positive sense, then we saw that this group of people who are very envious, that they think that lottery winners deserve to be rich. And I think it's logical. You mentioned the book by Chuck, and even he predicted this result. But this was not based on a survey. But it's logical because someone who has envy against someone else, usually he does not admit to being envious. Because if you are envious, it means that you accept that there is someone who has something that you want to have, and this, and then you come to the point, why don't I have it? And sometimes this is a problem for your self-conscious. But with a lottery winner, you can say, oh, it's only pure luck. And so people who are envious, they think that lottery winners deserve it more, what is absolutely absurd, than, for example, entrepreneurs.
You have a section dealing with the way the rich are treated in the media and in film. And first of all, even just for people to speak about the rich as if they're a homogeneous group, when this is an extremely diverse group of people in terms of the work they do and their role in society and so on. But of course, I think we all know the answer, how the wealthy are treated in the mass media. And since most people, according to your book, say they don't personally know a millionaire, their opinions are going to be formed by the millionaires they see on television.
Yes, this is true. And there was one very interesting question. And we asked people here in Germany what personality traits they associate with rich people. And if we asked all people, these were very negative associations with rich people. But then in the next step, we asked only those people who know a millionaire in person. And then they had a much more positive picture. And I think we know it from prejudice research with other minority groups. It's similar. If you don't know someone, sometimes you have a much more negative picture. And this was the case in our study as well. And then, as you mentioned it, you form your picture on the basis of maybe Hollywood movies. And we had research in Hollywood movies, 560 Hollywood movies, and for 43, we had an in-depth research. And we saw that always the rich people were portrayed in a much more negative way than their non-rich counterparts.
I think that was one of the most interesting results for me, was that if people knew a millionaire personally, they were much more inclined to have favorable views of that person than thinking about the rich in the abstract.
Yes, maybe I can give you some numbers for this thing.
Please.
For example, we had here the question in Germany, which, if any, of the following are most likely to apply to rich people? And then there was a list with personality traits. And 62% of the Germans said self-centered, 56% materialistic, 50% ruthless, 49% greedy, 43% arrogant. And that only after these negative traits, they mentioned some positive traits like intelligent and so on. And then we asked the same question, we asked which, if any, of the following are most likely to apply to the millionaire you know. And then the picture was much different. 71% answered industrious, 71% intelligent, 58% imaginative, 47% optimistic, and 45% visionary and farsighted. So you see a big difference.
Very, very striking. So I'm interested in what it is exactly that leads people to have the attitudes that they have. And some of a great deal of it is not, let's say, rational. Let's say it's coming from some other type of source or motivation. So you've got chapters trying to account for this. So first of all, chapter 5 talks about zero-sum beliefs. I am shocked at how many ordinary people really do believe that the wealthy have their money because they took it from the poor or something. They have it at the expense of the poor. If I were going to try to amass a fortune, I wouldn't go to the poor to try to get my money. The whole philosophy makes no sense. But the idea of zero sum, that if you gain, I lose, is of course encouraged by people who want to foster envy. But how widespread is that?
Yes, it depends. And there's a huge difference between age groups in the United States, not only with this question, but as well with other questions. We had this question, to what extent do you agree with the following statement? The more the rich have, the less there is for the poor. On average in the United States, the population, there was 34% who agreed with this statement. But with young people, I mean people between 18 and 29 years, 45% supported this statement and only 29% disagreed with this zero-sum thinking in the younger people. And then I compare it now with older people, what means older than 60. And from these people older than 60, only 24% supported the statement, the zero-sum thinking statement, and 53% of the older people rejected zero-sum thinking. And so we have it with a lot of other questions, but this is only true for the United States. For example, we had here one question. I think this is very interesting. We asked people in the United States, to what extent do you agree or disagree with the following statement? Rich people are good at earning money, but they are not usually decent people. And the population as a whole, only 27% agreed with this statement, but 40% of younger people agreed and only 23% rejected the statement. With older people, exactly the other way around, people older than 60, only 15% agreed, but 50% disagreed with this statement that rich people are usually are not usually decent people. So, but this was only true for the United States, this difference between the age groups. In Germany and in France, it was a little bit more the other way around, that older people were more negative towards rich people than younger people. The difference was not so big, but if there was a difference, it was exactly in the other direction. So this was very interesting for me for United States.
I couldn't understand why that should be.
But I think we know it from other polls in the United States that a lot of young people embrace the idea of socialism and that capitalism became a dirty word.
I know, but why would that happen only in the United States? I mean, Europeans tend to be fairly left-wing. The young people there are experiencing the same phenomena in the U.S.
Yes, I thought about it, and to be honest, I'm not sure about the explanation. Maybe it has something to do with a financial crisis. Imagine someone is today 25 years old, and his first political experience was with 15 years. Maybe this is the age where you start to become interested a little bit in politics and you see something. And the first thing that his first experience in life was financial crisis. And you see the common interpretation in media and politicians and especially from intellectuals is that financial crisis was a crisis of capitalism. And I don't believe in this. I had a chapter in another book. I wrote a book, The Power of Capitalism. And in this book, I had a chapter about the financial crisis. So I don't believe in this interpretation. But most people believe that financial crisis was a crisis of capitalism. And I think the effects of the crisis were much stronger in the United States. And then there's another thing. The universities in Germany are also much more left than conservative or much more anti-capitalist as pro-capitalist. But I think this is much stronger in the United States. You see it's that even what was not in other countries, that even more educated people are in the United States, are more critical against rich people, what is not the case in European countries. And I think this has something to do with this very strong left-wing anti-capitalist ideology in American universities.
How about the phenomenon of scapegoating? This is not something that's unique to today or this particular situation, but it may help us understand some swaths of public opinion.
Absolutely. It's a good question, because this happened always in history when something happened that people could not understand. For example, like the plague in the Middle Ages. Then always people looked for scapegoats in the Middle Ages. This were, witches were killed. Between 40,000 and 60,000 women were killed in Europe because they were scapegoats for the plague or for other things that people could not understand. And today it's similar. If you speak, for example, about the financial crisis, in the financial crisis, greedy bankers or greedy managers were scapegoats, because I think it's very difficult to understand what really happened there, the causes of the financial crisis. And I think 99% of the people will not understand it. But we had one question there in our survey, and we asked people, what do you think about the following statement? Rich people or super rich people who want more and more power are responsible for all this crisis, humanitarian or financial crisis in the world. And there was, again, a difference between Europe and United States. For example, in Germany, 50% of the Germans agreed with this scapegoating question. And in United States, it was only 21%, and in UK, only 25%. People in UK and United States, they think almost identical about rich people. You see it if you look at this social envy coefficient that I mentioned before. The social envy coefficient is the ratio between envious and non-envious people in a country. For example, if the social envy coefficient is 1, it would mean that there are as many envious and non-envious people. And in Germany, it was 0.97. And in France, it was 1.21. That means in France, there are much more envious as non-envious people. But in United States, it was 0.42. And in UK, 0.337. So you see, in the United States and UK, the attitude towards rich people is almost identical. And they're much more near to each other than British people have much less in common with Germans and with French people.
I want to ask you about the way people look at how people become wealthy, whether it's through luck or otherwise. We'll do that after this quick break. Folks, with everything going on right now, a lot of people are asking if it's even possible to buy life insurance at all. And the short answer is yes, you can buy life insurance even during a declared pandemic. And if you have loved ones depending on your income, well, you probably should. It's part of what is called adulting these days, and you know you should do it. As an insurance marketplace, Policy Genius is in contact with the life insurance companies on their platform every day. They're keeping track of all the changes in the market so you don't have to, which means they can get you covered quickly and for the best price. Here's how it works. Policy Genius compares quotes from the top life insurance companies in one place. It takes just a few minutes to compare quotes from the top insurers to find your best price. This doesn't just save you a lot of legwork. You could save $1,500 or more a year by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and the red tape for free. So if you hit any speed bumps during the application process, they'll be there to take care of everything. So if you're one of the many people looking to buy life insurance right now, but you're not sure where to start, head to policygenius.com. Policy Genius will find you the best rate and handle the process completely. They'll get you and your family protected and give you one less thing to worry about. Chapter 8 is called Explaining Success, Individual Ability or External Circumstances. And what's, to my mind, interesting about this chapter is the difference between the way poorer people and wealthier people answer the question of whether the wealthy got the way they are through luck or not. It's quite striking.
Yes, absolutely. I think you see in all countries this differences that successful people, they think more in this way that they are the creator of their own life. And people who are not so successful, for example, economically not so successful, they blame external circumstances or they blame things like luck or bad fate or so as an explanation. And I think this is a big problem today that a lot of people want to see themselves as victim. But as long as you see yourself as a victim of capitalism, maybe, or victim of racism or whatever, you can't go forward. And in the moment, if you start to see yourself as a creator of your own life, you're the boss and you're not a victim. Only then you will become really successful. And you see it if you see the attitude of rich people, even people who are role model in United States, like Oprah Winfrey, for example, who became the first self-made black billionaire in the world with an estimated net worth of $2.7 billion. For her, for Oprah Winfrey, it was always that she, very important to say, you are the creator of your own life and don't see yourself as a victim only of something. And I think people who see themselves as a victim, they are not successful in life.
Let me, as we wrap up today, let me bring you a bit beyond the book and ask you, why does this matter? Why does it matter if the rich are viewed negatively in popular culture? This may be an injustice to them, but are there any broader implications of this, any ways that society might suffer if it looks upon the rich in this way?
Yes, absolutely, because we have to be aware that words can become deeds. If you look in history, there's an unwritten history of rich people as victims in the 20th century. Look, for example, I think a lot of younger people never heard about it, but that, for example, 500,000 to 600,000 so-called kuliks, that means wealthy peasants, were murdered in Russia, in the Soviet Union, only because they were rich. And similar things happened with Pol Pot in Cambodia or with the so-called Cultural Revolution in China. And there are a lot of examples in history. Even anti-Semitism had an economic aspect. My first doctoral thesis, as you mentioned before, was about Adolf Hitler and his anti-capitalist views were linked to anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic views as well. And you have to be aware that it starts with prejudice. It starts with negative stereotypes. And then in the situation of crisis, then words become deeds. And it hasn't to be so extreme like these examples with Russia or with China or so. But look what happened, for example, in the 70s within UK or in Sweden. At this time, there were in Sweden and in UK, people had a very negative attitude toward rich people, and rich people were scapegoated for all negative things that happened. And in the effect, they had an income tax there in UK, for example, with 85%. And in Sweden, it was really crazy. I have a chapter about it in my book about the power of capitalism. The famous author Astrid Lindgren, for example, she calculated that her tax was 102%, and it was true. It was exactly 102%, and a lot of rich people, like the founder of IKEA, this big furniture manufacturer in Sweden, he left Sweden, and for the rest of his life, he lived in Switzerland, and this was a disaster as well for Sweden and for UK, not only for the rich people, but for everyone. UK in the 70s, they called it the sick man in Europe. And a lot of people were out of work and high inflation and everyday strikes and disaster. And this was as well an effect of this socialist, anti-capitalist and anti-rich policy. So it does not hurt only rich people. And I want to add something. I had an interview a few days ago, and someone asked me, do we really need super rich people? And do we really need billionaires? And I asked him, do we really need successful entrepreneurs? Because this is exactly the same. If you look at the list of the richest people in the world, or richest people in the United States, you know, we have this Forbes list every year with the 400 richest Americans or with the richest people in United States. Almost everyone became rich as an entrepreneur, like Jeff Bezos with Amazon, Zuckerberg with Facebook, like Bill Gates with Microsoft, or Larry Page and Sergey Brin with Google. The only people who became not rich as entrepreneurs are heirs, and then in this case their father was a successful entrepreneur, and they go on then with this company. So, and today, what a lot of people don't know, we have more self-made billionaires as we had in some decades ago. There was research done by Forbes, and they analyzed the percentage of people who became rich as self-made entrepreneurs or who became rich as heirs. And in 1984, only 48% of the super rich people were self-made. Today, 67% of the super rich people are self-made, and these are entrepreneurs. And if people tell me or ask me, why do we need rich people? You can ask the same question would be, why do we need entrepreneurs? Why do we need successful entrepreneurs? And this zero-sum thinking that you mentioned before, this is so crazy. I give you one example why this zero-sum thinking is wrong. Look what happened in China, for example. In 1981, 88% of the Chinese people were living in extreme poverty, 88%. Today, this percentage is only less than 1%. It's the biggest reduction of poverty that happened ever in history, from 88% to less than 1%. But in the same time in China, there was an increase in billionaires like it never happened before, because in socialist time, there was not one single billionaire in China. And today, we have so many billionaires in China as we have in no other country in the world, with one exception, United States, you have more. And if the zero-sum thinking would be true, then you couldn't explain this. And I think these are only two sides of the coin, because if they started there with their economic reforms in China, more market and more private property, it began all with the slogan of Deng Xiaoping, who claimed, let first get some people rich. And this is what they've done. To accept that people get rich. And I'm very often in China, because I have their lectures about my other books, How to Get Rich. And so, and everyone want to get rich there. And if you would ask people in China whether they want to go back to socialist time because people were more equal and we had no rich people, everyone would think that you are crazy.
Well, indeed. And that's why that's one of the reasons your book is so valuable and helpful. It, first of all, lets us know where we stand in terms of public understanding and prejudice, and also helps us to understand the source of these prejudices and therefore the better to confront and overturn them, I hope. Well, the book, once again, is The Rich in Public Opinion, What We Think When We Think About Wealth, linking to it at tomwoods.com/1675. And Dr. Zitelmann, thanks so much for this book of yours and for your time today.
Tom, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. But I want to let you know that at the end of this week, probably tomorrow, I don't know if you're listening to these in order, but the week of June 13th, toward the end of that week, 2020, I will be releasing the free ebook on the police from a libertarian perspective. So I may do an episode reviewing some of the ideas expressed in there, then you can get that baby for free. So watch for that, listen for that, and hop on my email list. You get notified about things like this. You can get on there with my book about the lockdowns and the problems with those over at wrongaboutlockdown.com, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.